Well, it's time now for this week's edition of the Big Picture program, and joining us on the line, we have Brother Bukir Dawji. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I wonder if you slept last night, because, you know, after all the teasing on that political chat group for Mufti Zubair Bayat and Maulana Bam and Sabir Jazbai and others, they were all picking on your age and the fact that you're going, your hairline seems to be disappearing. I hope you didn't take it too personally.
That's a very sensitive subject, Maulana, very sensitive and also very, very traumatic for me. But Maulana, I'm just recovering from a very absolutely terrible experience I had yesterday. I don't really want to go into the details. I'm still very, very traumatized. It was in Sparks Road. And yes, it was Halima Khala again. She asked me if there were gays in South Africa 1,000 years ago. And I was very confused. Then she said she read on a poster for the newspaper that 1,000 years ago, Homo Naledi was in South Africa. And I ran for my life, Maulana. I took tablets, but I'm still very stressed. Sparks Road should carry a government health warning.
Story that caught your eye this week.
Before I get to the actual story that raised my eyebrows, it really stunned me, actually. Let me first ramble on a little bit, okay? 24th of September is a public holiday. I'm sure most of you don't know why it's a public holiday. It's very likely also that, inshallah, 24th will also be the day of Eid. So two important reasons why it's a special day. But there's a third very, very important reason why it's a holiday. I'm sure that no one will guess why it is one. Well, I'll tell you, the 24th of September is my birthday. That's why it's a public holiday. Yes, that's right, folks. It's my birthday. And you know what, Maulana, it's absolutely amazing. I just don't know where the 38 years went, eh?
No, actually, I was going to tell you that now that you're turning 65, you must know that's the average age of a human. So now you're on borrowed time.
I don't know where you got 65 from. You know, well, anyway, next week I'm going off to India, that is South India, for a few days. And we'll return, actually I'm not going with a group or anything, I'm just going alone. And then I will return one day before Eid, inshallah, that's the 23rd. Well, where is all this leading to? Well, I will be leaving a hint behind of what I expect when I return for my birthday. A nice, big birthday cake. That's what I want. Yes, that's right. A nice, simple birthday cake. And I will print the article from the British newspaper, the Daily Mail, and keep it where it will be noticed. Now, that article is about a spectacular cake made by Debbie Wingham, who is a 33-year-old cake designer. I'm reading from the article. It says that she was commissioned to create the masterpiece by one of her clients living in the United Arab Emirates, who she works with under a non-disclosure agreement. The cake was then presented to the client's daughter at her joint birthday and engagement party. And Maulana, what a cake it is, and what a cake. It says here, the 6-foot-long creation, in the style of a catwalk, features garments which resemble Miss Wingham's couture clothing. Several of the small models on the cake are wearing gowns that are edible versions of pieces she had previously made for the client. On the front row of the edible masterpiece, small figures can be seen alongside designer handbags, shoes, and designer shades, with some carrying their smartphones and tablets. Every piece of the cake, which took over 1,100 hours to make, was hand-sculpted by Miss Wingham. It has over 120 kilograms of fondant icing and 60 kilograms of modeling chocolate, which is predominantly used for sculpting along with 80 different airbrushed colors and effects. The cake weighs a staggering 450 kgs. So, the question is this, Maulana. Did it have icing? Well, let me put it this way. The icing is a little rich, and I don't mean a little too sweet. What I mean is that, and I'm reading again, the icing includes a 5.2-carat pink diamond, a 6.4-carat yellow diamond, and a total of 15 individual 5-carat white diamonds, another 4,000 stones that weigh a carat or more, including amethysts and emeralds, were also included. The runway is encapsulated and adorned with 401-carat and 73 3-carat white diamonds and 75 3-carat black diamonds. So you see, dear listeners, a nice simple birthday cake. And the cost of it, are you ready? A cool 50 million pounds. 50 million pounds. And last time I looked at the rand, it's equivalent to 1,052,551,742 rands. So there you are, folks. A rich Arab in the UAE making his daughter happy, eh? What's so wrong about that? So sweet, eh? So I will be leaving this article behind when I go to India. And on my birthday, I hope that my Ruksana has a big surprise for me. So, dear listeners, while I focus on the future, I ask you to think about the present. And now to the second story.
I have a gift for you. A voucher for a free hair transplant.
Okay. You don't need to settle the sofa joke, do you?
No, I'll carry on, carry on.
Don't tempt me there, Malana, don't tempt me. And for the next story, we go to China. A man, I like the way you said very quickly, no, don't tell the sofa one. A man who was separated from his wife phoned her at her workplace. And, of course, she was working a late shift and she didn't answer her phone. The husband got very, very cross. Actually, got very cross to the extent that next day he stormed into her workplace and attacked her. What did he do? Did he punch her? Did he hit her with something? No, he didn't. The man was so angry that he bit off her entire nose and swallowed it. And here's what the news article said. It's from the People's Daily News, People's Daily, it's called. Doctors have claimed the damage to Mrs. Yang's nose is so severe she will require extensive surgery. Almost her entire nose, including the nasal septum, soft triangle, and nose tip were eaten. Whew. Well, the police are still looking for the husband. So, Maulana, isn't it amazing how other people want to put your nose into their business?
Mm. This whole U.S. terror alert.
Ah, I love it. Now, many leading commentators have declared that the United States is a police state. Now, what does this mean? It means that civil liberties have been severely curtailed. We're talking about freedoms here. Yes, of course, we are told that the United States is a great democracy, but if you examine it carefully, you will see that the government is in the pocket of big money. Or to put it another way, if you want to be president, you better have bags of money, very big bags. And those who give it to you expect you to do their bidding. What is that expression? He who pays the piper calls the tune. And yesterday I came across a great article on an American website, and it was entitled, Sheldon Adelson is ready to buy the presidency. He just hasn't decided which Republican candidate to back. Well, I've spoken about this before. And as we know, he is a multi-billionaire, according to Forbes magazine, which looks into the fortunes of rich people. Adelson is worth $26 billion. Let me read a few lines from the article. It says here, Adelson has been known to boast that he is still, in his words, the richest Jew in the world. As such, he is unaccustomed to being ignored. Among the 17 candidates currently vying for the Republican presidential nomination, most are also competing in the Adelson primary. That's his own election, who he's going to pick. The hotly contested race for the donor's heart, which runs through Israel. Adelson's support for the Jewish state is so intense that he opposes American efforts to broker a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, arguing that the Palestinians are an invented people whose purpose, in his words, is to destroy Israel rather than negotiate with Iran, Adelson has called for a preemptive nuclear strike against the Islamic Republic. The stakes of getting on his good side are enormous. In 2012, Adelson spent $20 million supporting Newt Gingrich. Let me just jump to this. All told, Adelson reportedly spent $100 million against Obama in 2012. So, you see, dear listeners, this so-called great democracy in the world can be bought by the highest bidder. Anyway, back to the question of civil liberties. More and more, day by day, Americans are losing more and more of their freedoms. Laws are passed to snoop on people, look into the emails and conversations, into social media and so on. How come such things are allowed in a country that claims to respect freedoms, that is, civil liberties? And the answer is, today. Yes, today. What kind of answer is that, I hear you ask? Well, today is September 11th. Okay, Mamu? September 11th. When the Twin Towers came crashing down and the world, we are told, changed forever. Are you for us or are you for the terrorists? They hate us because of our values. You can hide, but we will hunt you down and get you. This is a war on terror. Well, 3,000 people died. And Americans told their government, do whatever it takes, never mind our freedoms. Keep us safe from terrorists. Look into our emails, listen to our conversations, do whatever you want. Just keep us safe. Well, when people start feeling safe and people start questioning why their freedoms are curtailed, suddenly the FBI or CIA says, hey, we just got important information that terrorists are about to carry out an attack. And then they issue an alert. Different colors for different levels of threat. Yellow alert to say, yes, there is a possibility of an attack, but it's not so great. The announcement of an orange alert means that the threat is quite serious. And a red alert means, hey, don't come out of your godras today. Bombs are going to go off. Well, every now and then these color-coded announcements are made, a truly rainbow nation, eh, Maulana? The United States. And this keeps the citizens reasonably afraid. But most of these threats are false. In other words, they are just bluffing the people. And I just came across an article entitled, "The Code Orange Terror Alerts Were Based on Fake Intelligence." And here's an extract. It refers to Tom Ridge. Who is he? Well, he was the head of a department known as Homeland Security, the main government department responsible for ensuring that Americans are safe by monitoring terrorist activity. Here's what the article says, Maulana. After leaving his position at Homeland Security, Tom Ridge acknowledged that the post 9/11 terror alerts were often based on flimsy evidence and that he had been pressured by the CIA to raise the threat level. And just to read a little bit more very quickly, according to an official statement, this is what happened around this time a few years ago. According to the official statement, intelligence indicates that Al-Qaeda-trained pilots may be working for overseas airlines and ready to carry out suicide attacks. More specifically, Al-Qaeda and Taliban terrorists were, according to Homeland Security, planning to hijack an Air France plane and crash it on U.S. soil in a suicide terror strike similar to those carried out on September 11th. Air France canceled 6 Christmas flights out of Paris. F-16 fighters were patrolling the skies of Washington. Yet it turned out that the stand-down orders on Air France's Christmas flights from Paris to Los Angeles, which were used to justify the Code Orange alert during the Christmas holiday, were based on fabricated information. Needless to say, these fabricated media reports served to create a tense atmosphere during the Christmas holiday. Los Angeles International Airport was on maximum deployment with counterterrorism and FBI officials working around the clock. Yet, following the French investigation, it turned out that the terror alert was a hoax. The information was not very precise, as claimed by U.S. intelligence. The 6 Al-Qaeda men turned out to be a 5-year-old boy, an elderly Chinese lady who used to run a restaurant in Paris, a Welsh insurance salesman, and three French nationals. So you see, dear listeners, make the people afraid. A four-year-old terrorist? Good heavens. So you make them afraid, very afraid, and they will let you do whatever you want to. Now, what they would say is, please take away our freedoms to keep us safe. And so we now have the United Police State of America. And the U.S. announced a few days ago that South Africa is about to be attacked by terrorists. Where? By whom? And how are they going to attack? Well, sorry, we don't really know, but we believe that U.S. companies may be attacked. What is the purpose of this warning? Well, obviously, it will make South Africans feel very scricky, make them nervous, feel insecure. Maybe even tourists will cancel plans to visit South Africa. So, of course, it is geared to have a negative impact. South Africa needs to be clapped now and then to keep it in line, because sometimes it defies the United States, you see. You don't want to arrest Bashir? Take a clap. You want to prevent some South Africans from fighting in the Israeli army? Here, take another clap. You want to do deals with Russia? Okay, turn that face again. And so it goes. As for me, dear listeners, I take this warning from the United States very, very, very seriously indeed. And I want to give you people some advice. Dear listeners, listen very carefully. Be very careful when you deal with U.S. companies operating in South Africa. If you want to buy something from KFC or McDonald's, please, please plan very carefully. First, phone the order through. And then wear a very bright T-shirt, preferably a yellow one. Tell the assistant on the phone to wave a serviette when she sees you with your yellow T-shirt standing on the pavement outside the shop to indicate that your order is ready. Have the exact amount for payment so that you don't have to wait for change. Look around carefully for people with long beards carrying black flags. If you determine that the coast is clear, then run in, throw the money on the counter, grab your three-piece combo and run out as fast as you can. You know, you really don't know when the attack will be taking place. So, dear listeners, this is my considered advice to you. Your safety cannot be compromised. And thank you, dear America, for tipping us off about these horrible Muslim extremists. We are really grateful to you for helping us to avert another ISIS crisis and saving us from the Boko Haramis. God bless America. Amen.
The refugees in Europe.
Muammar Gaddafi is reported to have said on France 24 TV 1 year before he was killed, he said, if I go down, Europe will turn black. There are millions of blacks who would come to the Mediterranean to cross to France and Italy. Libya plays a role in security in the Mediterranean. Well, you know, I suppose he was trying to save his skin, telling the Europeans, stick with me, I will save you from the black hordes. And that's quite amazing, isn't it, this racist statement, considering that Africa addressed him as brother leader. Anyway, this whole phenomenon, this great human migration, gives one pause for thought. It's quite a remarkable development to see hundreds of thousands of Muslims leaving Muslim lands to seek peace and prosperity in so-called non-Muslim lands. What does this say about the Muslim world? And the word that comes to mind is shameful. But maybe there's another way to look at it. Islam comes to Europe. And for Europe, it's a terrible nightmare, an unstoppable bad dream. And I just love it. And I like it particularly because one chap doesn't like it. Who is he? Geert Wilders. Poor fellow is very cross. Geert Wilders, as you may know, is an anti-Muslim bigot and Islamophobe. And he's, of course, a member of the parliament in Holland. Here's what was reported in the Jerusalem Post. Dutch far-right leader Geert Wilders called the wave of refugees pushing into Europe an Islamic invasion during a parliamentary debate on Thursday. At the start of the debate, will this call the wave of refugees passing through Hungary and other countries, an Islamic invasion of Europe, of the Netherlands, masses, these are his words, masses of young men in their 20s with beards singing Allahu Akbar across Europe. It's an invasion that threatens our prosperity, our security, our culture and identity. What a nightmare for Fred Wilders, eh? Masses of young men in their 20s saying Allahu Akbar across Europe. I like it. And there is some debate in Israel also about whether to take in refugees. One leading Israeli opposition leader, Isaac Herzog, said, yes, Israel should take in some Syrians. After all, Syria is right next door to Israel. But Netanyahu won't have any of it. He gave an emphatic no to the idea. Israel will not take in any Syrian refugees, he said. Well, dear listeners, I can fully understand why he said so. And the reason is very simple. How can he agree to allow Syrian refugees when there are now over 5 million Palestinian refugees, many waiting for 60 years to return to the land and homes from which they were chased away when Israel was created? So it makes sense why he cannot open the door. And still with the subject of Israel, latest news from last night. The United Nations General Assembly voted last night to allow the raising of the Palestinian flag outside the UN building where the flags of all other countries are flying. This is a symbolic clap of Israel. Why symbolic? Because actually it doesn't really mean very much, except that the world is more and more recognizing the Palestinians as a people who have, who deserve their own state. It's also symbolic because Israel opposed it very strongly. The vote was overwhelming. 119 voted in support of the Palestinians, 45 abstained, and 8 voted against it. Israel was one of the 8 that voted against it. And guess who else? No need to think very hard. The United States, of course. So another thumbs up for the Palestinians by the international community.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, you may have got this, and some bright sparks out there regularly send me some very funny stuff.
Mm.
And you, as I said, may have also received this. It really had me laughing very loudly. Here it is. Man's daughter, baby doll. Man's girlfriend, Barbie doll. Man's wife, rice and doll. Man's mother-in-law, micro doll. Here's the last one, Yamalal. Ronnie from Mirbank was once again in ICU in Wentworth Hospital, and Ghulam Bhai, his friend, went to visit him. What happened this time, Ronnie? And Ronnie replied, what I must tell you, Gulu, I was sitting in the lounge watching TV, minding my own business, when Pushpa came in and asked me, darling, tell me something, be honest, what do you like most about me, my beautiful face or my fantastic body? And Ghulam said, yeah, and then what happened? And Ronnie replied, I looked at her slowly from head to toe. Then I answered, darling, I admire your sense of humor. Pushpa had a frying pan in her hand, Gulu.
Looks like Ronnie got timeshare at the ICU. And Kalevi, as always,
point, I think it.
Jazakallah for your time.
Always a pleasure, Maulana. So far, so good.
Yeah, no, I got to leave you early this morning. You got to take time to do your hair before Juma. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.